Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good Monday evening. What is going on, everybody? Sean Wally with Sean Boyd for yet another edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd, it's been a fun and exciting weekend all over the sports world, including for you and I.
Yeah, well, the fun that you're talking about is training camp has opened up for all the teams in the NFL, and this is the time of the year where if you're a sports fan, you know that everything is 0-0, a clean slate, and your team has the chance of going to the Super Bowl. Boy, Sean Wally, the Seattle Seahawks getting things started, of course, in their training camp, and the Oakland Raiders, and you know those are teams that we are very fond of. But we have a guest that's going to be coming on here pretty soon, and he's probably going to talk otherwise from the Raiders and the Seahawks, and so I look forward to having him on.
Well, one of those teams that thinks they have a shot at another Lombardi Trophy is the Pittsburgh Steelers and Steeler Nation, and let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Ron Lipok. Ron, an author of Steelers Takeaways from Cardinal Publishing. Ron, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, Ron, no doubt about it that we can probably guess you've been a lifelong Steelers fan. And, of course, this book, Takeaways, man, how did it come about? Because, I mean, you're a community manager for the Workforce Development Community of Practice. And so how did this come about as far as you writing a book for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, I've been publishing almost all my life and a Steelers fan as well. So I put two together, put out a newsletter covering Pittsburgh sports for a good 5 years or so. And that sort of segued into me being able to get to talk to a lot of these ex-players and so ask them some questions about their lives, and it's been fun. I've talked to over 400 former Steelers and got some great stories and some fun stories, some tough stories, and put all together, now put this into a book.
And, of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sean Wally and myself, we were talking about our favorite teams, and, of course, mine being the Oakland Raiders, and, of course, the Oakland Raiders and the Pittsburgh Steelers have a tremendous history.
We're still talking here.
Oh, yeah. So, well, that's good. You know, and of course, Sean Wally can kind of talk about recent years with his team. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, as far as a winning tradition is concerned, they go a long ways and they have stayed consistent over the years. And kind of give our listeners your background as far as what you learned in Steelers Takeaways.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say consistency. I think part of the driving force, and I just was thinking about this and writing on this today, actually, is the ingenuity that this team has showed over the course of the years. And everything from they're the ones who developed the concussion test, they're the ones who really were one of the first teams to have a strength and conditioning coach, a weightlifting coach. They had a former Olympic weightlifter in the early 70s come in and teach them how to weightlift. They developed, they didn't develop, but they adopted that 3-4 defense, the trap offense, all the way to today where Tomlin still pushes that two-point conversion, and he's one of the biggest advocators of going up to for the 2 points all the time. And the reason I think this all is that security that and that consistency that you just spoke to of the fact that the coaches know they've got security. They can test, they can experiment. Heck, the Steelers developed that whole scouting system in the 70s that no one else except maybe Dallas had and implemented, getting to those smaller black colleges and getting that great talent that was there that no one else would really go and scout. And this is all due to that consistency of having the same coach there for a long time, knowing that coach felt secure enough to be able to test and develop these strategies. And I think that's what I learned the most in some respects, is just how that consistency really was the foundation. And that security, job security, was really that foundation for them to be able to come up with all these ideas and put them into place.
Ron, how important has the Rooney family been to that consistency?
Well, they learned a lot of hard lessons in the 60s. I mean, what people may not realize is in the 60s, a lot of those players that I spoke to from the 50s and 60s talked about those 50s and 60s teams as sort of the forgotten era, where those players don't get a lot of credit. But the problem they had then was that the Rooney families, early in the stages of that team, traded picks, traded players like their cards. And they just never had, again, any consistency. And somewhere along the way, I think when Dan Rooney started to get a little bit more of a hold on that team and Chuck Knoll came in, they learned that they had to develop players, quit wheeling and dealing. Knoll wouldn't coach unless they promised him that they could develop his way, suffer for a little bit, and then grow and become better because they're able to develop their own guys. And I think the Rooneys finally learned some lessons, and it's interesting to see how that's really stayed with the team. You know, everyone talks about, oh, they don't do anything in free agency, they don't do any trades. Well, it's because they learned those lessons, and they learned that the consistency is really what builds a team, not all that wheeling and dealing.
How important has the Rooney family been to the NFL in a whole? You mentioned concussion testing, and there are other things just like that.
Well, it's hard to say for certain, but I think they're really trying to, and they try to be sort of that voice of reason. They're almost like the referee between some of the owners that like to do a lot of the crazier stuff and some of the owners who don't want to do anything at all. They are not against experimentation. They're not against doing things. If you notice that a lot of the international play and a lot of the things that the NFL likes to do to experiment, the Rooneys are a little bit on the forefront of that. They like to do that. The Rooney rule for hiring of minority coaches, as an example. They are, you know, again, very in tune to that idea of experimentation and trying to better things. And I think that has influenced a lot of what the NFL tries to do, especially on the hiring front. So they certainly have been influential. And, you know, we'll see if that continues.
Ron Lippig, the author of Steeler Takeaways, joins us here on The Double. Now, Ron, in your book, you talked about the players, some of the Steelers players, discussing their adversities of the physical impact of the game. Now, as you know, this past year, there's been a huge movie in concussion. Some could say it's controversial, you know, based on the relationship between the NFL and, you know, some of the medical doctors. Have some of those players actually talked to you about that concern? Because in the movie, the Pittsburgh Steelers did have a couple of players that were highlighted in the movie.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of these players talk about it. I interviewed a couple guys, John Hilton, a tight end from the 60s, who the interview every 10 minutes would restart because he suffered from dementia, and that's as far as his consciousness could take him, and then the interview would restart until his wife had to step in and say, look, this is not going to go any further. There's nothing left to give. So, and I spoke to Frenchie Fuqua a few days ago, and he's doing everything he can to get out in front of dementia. He's taking shots every day to try to get in front with hormone shots. And so all these players, you know, at least a lot of them are certainly conscious of the issue, and some blame the NFL, some just say that's part of the game. So it really depends on who you talk to. It's not going to stop. It's interesting with the movie that, you know, one of the guys they point out is Dr. Maroon, Joseph Maroon, who I actually interviewed. And he's one of the guys who actually developed the concussion test in Pittsburgh. Chuck Knoll challenged him to do so when Dr. Maroon said that a certain player couldn't play because of concussion. And Chuck Knoll said, well, tell me why. Prove it. And that's how that concussion test got started in the first place. So, you know, it's an issue that's, you know, not going to go away anytime soon. And I think the players are becoming more aware of what to do to protect themselves. But, again, there's probably only so much one can do.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, when you're talking about a contact sport that is football, I mean, the players have to know going in, which they do, that these types of things can happen. It's just unfortunate that you cannot detect something like CTE until the person actually passes away. And so that's kind of a grim look on things. Hopefully there'll be, you know, more practices moving forward that, you know, to where you can detect it early. But right now it's, you know, you just kind of cross your fingers.
Yeah, and there is no way. That's exactly right. There's no way to detect it until, you know, until someone unfortunately passes. There are players literally giving, you know, their brains to science after they pass away so that they can do so. But, you know, hopefully they'll figure that out soon. I think, you know, those, you know, you see Gary Bettman in the NHL proclaim that there's no connection, proven connection between dementia, CTE, and concussions, and you have to shake your head. I mean, I don't know where he's coming from here. It's certainly there's nothing, you know, there's no final smoking, you know, gun evidence, but, you know, there's common sense that has to come into play, and there's also compassion and care for the players in your league. And at some point you have to say, is it strong enough understanding that this connection is there that even if we're not 100% sure, let's take those precautions because, you know what, these are our players and we should give a dang about these guys. And when you see someone like Gary Bettman get up in the NHL as an example and say there's no connection and everyone's overreacting, you have to shake your head and figure out what, you know, what's this guy doing.
Ron, in your hundreds of interviews, who are some of your favorite and your most memorable that stand out to you in writing your book, Steelers Takeaways?
Well, there's, you know, it's hard because there's so many different stories you hear. I think speaking to some of these guys that didn't make it, that were supposed to, there's a guy named Troy Edwards, who was a first-round draft pick, and to hear him speak about why he didn't make it and how contrite he was and saying, you know what, I should have made it. I didn't listen to Hines Ward when he told me I needed to work harder. And to hear that kind of comment I thought was really interesting. J.T. Thomas, who was a cornerback in the 70s, spoke about some the reasons why some of those 70s teams really were successful were things that you would never think of, how they got together to bridge racial and other divides at things like churches and at a doctor used to throw a party every year for the Steelers. And every year that was this big gathering. They all got together and at the end of the day, those are the kinds of things that brought the team together. Stories like that. Gary Dunn was a trip. He's a defensive lineman for the Steelers back in the 70s. And the stories he have of him and Mike Webster fighting on the freeway, all the jokes that they played on one another, things like that were always a lot of fun. Those stories about the jokes they play on each other were always fun.
What did you learn most about the game of football and the Pittsburgh Steelers in putting your book together?
Well, I think, you know, how you know, and I guess it's on the forefront of my mind today because I actually wrote an article on it today, but this whole notion of consistency and the lesson that this team learned and stuck with, and basically that you can't keep playing games with the team and trading people away and bringing people on and trading draft picks. You have to be really selective about that because there is a lot to be said for how you put a team together and you mesh in the locker room. And it's, you know, people sort of look at that and say, yeah, sure, whatever. But you look at what the Steelers have done. They've had three coaches in, what, 60 years? And what a coincidence. They're also really successful. And I think that's a big part of why. And it's really also interesting because you see a lot of the other Pittsburgh teams, like the Pirates, and you see the Penguins even to an extent now, where they're very close to the Steelers organization. A lot of the coaches and a lot of the front office people are close. And you have to think that some of those lessons are filtering through because they're developing their teams the same way. They're not wheelers and dealers. Some of it's financial, but also a lot of it is strategic. They don't, you know, I think they all have learned the lesson that you develop internally and that's how you build a champion. And you don't wheel and deal and trade away and lose that consistency and lose that closeness as a team. And I think that's what I've learned with the Steelers a lot is just how that has been integral into the whole sport, you know, to the whole team.
Ron Lippick joining us here on The Double. Now, Ron, you've talked about the consistency, and there is no doubt that, you know, when you're talking about all of sports, there's probably none greater inconsistency than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, you'd mentioned the coaches, the three coaches in 60 years. We're talking about Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, and Chuck Knoll. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Out of these three coaches who've all donned Super Bowls, those six Super Bowl titles that the Steelers have, which coach to you is the embodiment, the full embodiment of consistency with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that is on the spot. And I think you got to go with Chuck Noll because he's the one who built the foundation. They're all sitting on the foundation, but he built it. And I think he's the one who brought that. What's interesting about Chuck Noll is he didn't just bring that discipline and the consistency. He brought this creative, interesting spirit. He, for all the blue-collar attitude that the team embodies and people look at, when you look at the Steelers, the guy, he couldn't be held back. There's a coach, Dan Radakovich, who was the offensive line coach for the Steelers. They called him Mad Rad Radakovich because he had all these ideas, all these crazy ideas, and he would always try to tinker with sort of the strategy of the team. And when I interviewed him, he said, I couldn't hold Chuck Noll back because that's how creative and how much he liked to change things and experiment all the time. And I think when you look at that, you look at that foundation that Chuck Noll built, I think, that to me embodies the team. That's the guy that developed the scouting system, said, we're going to do it this way, we're going to do it internally. And everyone else is running with the ball that he handed them. And I think that's, to me, if you could have to pick a guy, who better than the guy who won 4 Super Bowls and built the team from scratch almost?
That most definitely. And and Chuck Noll, I remember watching, Chuck Noll on the sidelines, and, he had that very stern look on his face. And some might say Bill Cowher had, an even more stern with the chin. But those three coaches actually have a strong character that is also portrayed on the gridiron. I mean, when you talk about Mike Tomlin, there's a look, in his eye that says, hey, let's stay focused, let's stay consistent. And that's exactly what these guys are.
Well, it's interesting. I think one episode under Cowher sort of maybe embodies the whole Pittsburgh spirit. And that's when they were playing Indianapolis in their Super Bowl run, and that Cinderella Super Bowl run. Troy Polamalu intercepted a pass by Peyton Manning, and then they overturned it. And it was a big scandal. How could they do that? It was clearly an interception. But what they showed on the sideline as they were reviewing the play before they overturned it was Bill Cowher getting the whole team together and saying, they're probably going to overturn this, and it shouldn't matter. You are not going to use this as an excuse to lose. You are going to go out there, this game is on you. And you look at some other teams, I won't mention names, but a lot of them sort of play the victim role. And they say, oh, the referees cost us this, or this cost us that.
Hey, I'm right with you. I just want to make sure Sean Wally is in on this as well. But no, I'm right with you. Go ahead, Ron.
No, and I'm referring to interdivisional teams, so to be fair. I know I forgot who I'm speaking with here. But
thank you, Ron. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that to me is really almost embodies the Pittsburgh mindset. And one of the reasons why I think they're so successful too is because there's no excuses. Five people can get hurt. It doesn't matter. That's those next five's coming up, and that's Mike Tomlin's expression, next man up. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're the last guy on the team or the first or the best guy on the team. You're expected to perform, and there's no excuses. And that to me is sort of a good embodiment of what this team's about.
Now, Ron, did you find it easy to get these former players to be forthcoming and want to talk to you and share their thoughts, or was it like pulling teeth with a few of them?
Well, some was pulling teeth, but I think a lot of them wanted to talk because a lot of them weren't given an avenue for a discussion for a long time. These guys in the 50s and 60s and even in the 70s, a lot of the guys I speak to are not the household name guys. But their stories are the ones that I really almost appreciate the most because their struggles just to stay on the team. Imagine, being a guy who's cut 12 times in 2 years and plays in 4 different cities. To me, those stories and how you persevere through that, that's almost a more exciting story for me than hearing how, for the 100th time, how a star player made a big catch in a big game. Because, those are the stories you don't hear as much. So those guys, they wanted to tell this story because they don't get many chances to do it. And one of the strategies I took in these interviews was I don't speak, except very rarely, to active players. Because, it's like if I asked you, yeah, what do you think of your boss? You know, you may tell me the truth, but you know, if you don't like your boss and you want to keep your job, you're probably not going to say so much. So that's the same approach I took with these guys is, you know, let me talk to the guys who aren't in the game anymore. They're free to talk. They're free to tell me their experiences. They're free to tell me their opinions. And, you know, in terms of how I got these guys, you know, a lot of times you just ask. The harder thing is to find them because they're very open and very, you know, most of these guys were extremely open with their time and their thoughts.
Ron, looking back at all the time and energy you've put into your book, Steelers Takeaways, what are you most proud of?
Getting it done. I think it's probably it's a labor of love, you know, like everyone else. Everyone has things they love to do, and this was something I just happened to love to do, and it took a life of its own. And I'm proud of getting it out there. You know, it's one of those things, you know, a couple years ago I never expected to do. I had these interviews, and I was approached to do the book, and I loved the idea. I hated the thought of doing it, but here it is now. It's out there, and I think just getting it done, I'm proud of that, and I'm proud that you know that these guys were willing to talk with me and give me these insights because I didn't expect to get that much openness. I wanted it. I asked for it, but I didn't expect it all the time. And yet these guys were wonderful with their time and their thoughts, so I appreciate all that time that they've given me.
Now, Ron, you had mentioned when you were talking with the players as far as, you know, understanding what type of a boss they had, meaning in the coaches that we talked about in the recent 60 years. You did an article back in July of 2014. You're part of an article called Five Types of Bad Bosses. And yeah, there's the bully boss, the micromanager, the workaholic, the by-the-numbers boss, the divisive boss. Did you go in there thinking that maybe the Steelers coaches might fall into one of those categories?
Well, you know, they're bosses. And, yeah, so there's leadership qualities that transcend occupation, right? There's, you know, there's engagement, there's empowerment. And, you know, it's really interesting that you asked that because, you know, one of the things I wrote recently is about how the fact that the Steelers coaches were empowered and they were given trust by their bosses, that's the engine by which the Steelers team was able to succeed because that empowerment, that trust is what enabled them to be creative without fear of losing jobs. And that ingenuity, that creativity is what helped create this dynasty because the scouting process they developed, all these things that, you know, even they even used hypnotism in the 70s to help to work with players. All these things they implemented, they couldn't have done if they didn't have trust that they weren't going to get fired if one thing didn't work and all those things they tried. And you don't get that in every workplace.
Now, Ron, I'm going to, you know, give you another question here. The top, we talked about the five types of bad bosses. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit because you've done the book with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Which teams do you think are the top five franchises all time in NFL? Of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers being one.
Oh, wow. You have to give credit to New England, you know, in terms of recently. I mean, you don't have, you know, love or hate how they won some of their games and all the heat behind all of that. They still win, and you know, there's something to be said for that. I'm trying to think Green Bay would be another one. They're always in the thick of things. Dallas is marketable. You may not like, you know, what some of the things that they do. I don't like who they bring on their team sometimes, but they are valuable as a franchise, and if you value that, then you have to credit them for at least maintaining that value. So those are some of the teams. In Seattle, they've done an amazing job, I will say, of taking a team that struggled for a long time, and now they're continuous contenders. You know, it's hard to rewrite history. It's hard to recreate yourself, and I think Seattle has done a good job of that. And you have to credit them for that because it's hard to get out from under negative history. I mean, the Steelers were always sad sack losers until they weren't. And Seattle had a little bit of that, and they've come out from under that and really redefined themselves, and you have to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, you know, and that is a great top five, you know. And it's funny because you had mentioned, you know, for a while a team being a losing team, and it's amazing when you start to win how you forget your past. And so, but yeah, I mean, I would definitely see those teams as top teams. That's a good list. Great list.
Well, and that's the danger. And you don't want to forget that past. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Steelers have maintained things is because they've clung to that sad sack history enough to understand they don't want to repeat that. And that's why they don't do those trades and they don't do the wheeling and dealing and aren't very active in free agency. Yeah, they have a long memory of why they didn't succeed for so many years and for that very reason. And they don't want to repeat that. And I think when everyone gets frustrated at them not dipping into free agency, not redefining their team by all the moves that they make, it's because they have a memory of what got them here, of how they got out from under that. And Seattle, I hope, does the same thing. You know, Seattle did a lot of good things to get to this point in their history now, where they're contending and they're strong and they're continuing to be looked at as a tough physical team. And you don't want to forget that just to win, because that's the mistake a lot of teams make.
Now, Ron, as a fan of the Steelers, final question for you. I know it's getting late back east. Where do you see the Steelers finishing in 2016?
Well, hopefully not more in prison. they keep their heads on their shoulders. I think the Steelers are as good as their ability to stay out of trouble allows them to be, and out of injury. Those are the two things that plague them, injuries and trouble. And it's hard to say because the franchise prides itself on quality players and quality people, and 99% of those people are, but then you get a couple of silly mistakes with key players, and all of a sudden, that derails things. So I think they can go as far as their health and common sense in terms of player behavior takes them.
Ron Lippick, publisher of the Pittsburgh Sports Daily Bulletin, PGHSportsDaily.com, and author of the new book out today, Steelers Takeaways from Cardinal Publishing. You can get it on Amazon, check it out, and follow them on Twitter at Pittsburgh Sport. Ron, thanks so much for your time and your insight tonight.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, and I wish good luck to Seattle, and I hope we see each other in the Super Bowl.
Well, Ron, that game last fall in November in Seattle was an epic one. Regardless of the outcome, it was a great football game. So maybe we'll see one in February.
Hey, Ron, let's not forget the Oakland Raiders. There's going to be a return to dominance here pretty soon. So
hey, you guys are close.
Yeah. So we're getting better.
How about we play you in the championship game? Maybe beat you in the last second field goal and then play Seattle.
I can't put up with another play that decides a game. I mean, I was making fun of Sean Wally about, when you were talking about, fans and teams, complaining about certain plays. But gosh, there is no bigger
Super Bowl 40.
Yeah, but there's no bigger play that has been decided between two teams than that of the Immaculate Reception. I mean, that goes down in folklore history.
Well, I just spoke to Frenchy Fuqua a couple of days ago, and I did interview him for the book, and what he said was he will reveal everything about that play.
Oh, my God.
When he passes away, he has a letter that he is going to give to his son that explains in full detail what happened on that play. And when he passes away, then and only then will we know the truth.
Now your top two teams that you mentioned, Pittsburgh and New England, the Oakland Raiders have a little bit of beef with controversial plays. And we'll just leave it at that. But definitely a hats off to the Pittsburgh Steelers and that in your book, Steelers Takeaways. So the continued success to you and we look forward to talking with you in the future.
Thank you. Looking forward to it and good luck over there as well. I appreciate it.
There goes Ron Lippick, author of Steelers Takeaways, a new book that really goes in depth into the lives of football players after the game and what they thought during the game. Great stories. Even if you're not a Steelers fan, it's still great to learn about the game, about life in the NFL, and that's what that book is about.
Yeah, and of course he's talked to a lot of players and you know, former Steeler players and getting the ins and outs. And of course, this Steelers team this year, you know, they have some great talent. You know, you're talking about a team that in the offseason, Ben Roethlisberger actually talking about going for 2-point conversions every single time, man. You know, I would look forward to seeing that, seeing if Mike Tomlin has that temperament to keep that going. But definitely hats off to the Pittsburgh Steelers and their great success. Whew. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about what Sean Wally and yours truly was doing over the past weekend. You're listening to the best sports talk. Keep it locked in on the Double with the Double S Express.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com. Guys, are you tired of being tired? Frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds. And more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest. I tried a different product and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra strength, all-natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally, along with Sean Boyd. Great interview with Ron Lipick, author of Steelers Takeaways. But that was last half hour. Now it's time to get to the fun and excitement we had this past weekend.
Well, yeah, Sean Wally, you know, yours truly, I was in Northern California in Sonoma for the Mellow Yellow Sonoma Nationals, and for those of you who don't know, that's drag racing. And man, Sean, I had an awesome time. I mean, this is my first time actually, working, a drag race series. And man, it was the most amazing thing that I've ever seen. First of all, when you get to the vineyard, I'm thinking, why in the world would they have these vineyards out in the middle of nowhere? And I wasn't thinking at the time that these cars, these vehicles make so much noise that they have to be in a secluded area. And, Sonoma is wine country, but, the people that collapsed on this event, I mean, there must have been about 2,500 RVs all around. And, you know, it was like a KOA on steroids, you know. I mean, but it was so much fun. I mean, families having fun, people, you know, getting together. Of course, the drag racing. And, you know, I'm thinking, man, you know, maybe this is going to be a loud spectacle. I'm not going to like it. I had a blast, Sean Wally, and I'm looking forward to the next time I get to work an NHRA event.
Well, for about 2 seconds, I thought I might be down there working it with you, but there were others that were crewed much closer than myself, like a couple of sons you might have. And, you know, the only question I have is for a summer event in desert-like conditions, why are they putting you in black attire?
Oh, boy. You know, I ask the same thing. Not only was it black attire, not only do we have to wear black pants, these shirts that they gave us, they were long sleeves. And so I paid for it. I rolled my sleeves up and, you know, I put sunblock 100 on and that didn't even work. When I took my shirt off, I had this nice trucker's tan that, or actually farmer's tan that went along my arm. And man, I got burnt up tremendously. But it didn't take away from the fun because I had a ton of fun, you know, from the day's work. And I couldn't wait till the next day. I couldn't wait to see, you know, who's going to win the semifinals, who's going to win the finals. And, you know, again, just the fanfare. There's, you know, you had all the different manufacturers, car manufacturers there. Toyota had a big exhibit to where they had a Ferris wheel there. You know, it was just an amazing weekend in Sonoma and getting a chance to be around some great people.
And so it's fair to say you learned a lot, not only about the racing industry, but how many different vendors and people from all over travel to those events.
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, the NHRA kind of gets a, you know, takes a back seat when it comes to racing. Of course, the Formula One racing is a very popular sport along with NASCAR. You know, they take the, you know, precedence as far as racing is concerned. The NHRA is really trying to do a good job on, you know, revitalizing this sport. And what Fox Sports has done is they have taken it over, and Fox has done an amazing job over the past year on trying to, you know, pump life into some sports that they feel that they can actually, you know, put their energies in. One being the NHRA, the other being golf, minus Tiger Woods, and, you know, Fox has joined that as well. And so, you know, with that being said, I think that the NHRA has a positive upswing with more money being put into it. And of course, you know, making sure that everybody drinks a ton of Mellow Yellow.
How much Mellow Yellow did you have?
Gosh, man, you know, I had enough to where, you know, I was feeling, I had the Beatles song in my head, you know, to where, you know, every time I would sip some, they call me Mellow Yellow. So I had to bring some home, and there's some in the fridge. Gosh. But yeah, it was, there was quite a bit. After every race, you know, these guys had to have a bottle of Mellow Yellow in their hands. And, you know, you just have to understand, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you, basically.
So, Sean, the NHRA heading north on I-5 to Pacific Raceways in Kent this coming week and weekend. What do you think you should, what would you tell people if someone's never been to an NHRA event and they're in the Pacific Northwest? Why should they head out to Pacific Raceways?
Well, yeah, they definitely have to get to one. I mean, there's all walks of life are at these events. Again, as I had mentioned, it's kind of a piece of Americana. It's a family atmosphere. And if you love racing, you know, this is a great way to get indoctrinated to it. When you're talking about some of the other sports, racing sports like NASCAR and Formula One racing, there's, for the most part, 500 laps around the oval. With drag racing, it's just a straight. So they're real quick. It keeps you captured, keeps you motivated. I would definitely get out to it. And Sean, I believe that this weekend up in the Pacific Northwest is Seafair Weekend.
That's exactly right. Seafair on Lake Washington. The hydros heading across I-90 to get things going on the lake.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, you have two choices this weekend. And, you know, that's what I was explaining to the Fox crew as I said, hey, you know, it's going to be a little tough getting around this weekend, you know, with the Pacific Raceways in Seattle for the Northwest Nationals. But there's also Seafair. So for those of our listeners in that area, look out because traffic is going to be bogged down everywhere. But if you have a choice, of course, Sean Wally, you had the chance at the Columbia Cup this past weekend. Speaking of Seafair, speaking of the hydros, man, how was that?
Hot, long days, but a lot of good work put in by those of us working for KNDU and SWX Television in Eastern Washington. In fact, SWX coverage goes all the way into Western Montana. So a lot of viewers potentially for the Columbia Cup on the Columbia River. And, you know, the weather was upwards of 100 degrees on Friday, right around 98. So it cooled off a little bit on Saturday. Sunday, it was just about 90. So much more reasonable on Sunday. And like I said, long hours, but it was a lot of fun. And I gained experience that, you know, I think will hopefully be beneficial down the road. In a little bit of TV speak, I ran a computerized software that switched between four different sources or four different cameras to help get them on the air.
Oh, man, it sounded like you were very busy, such as myself. Now, of course, we're talking about the Columbia Cup in the Tri-Cities, and somebody had a great weekend, a former guest here on the double, Jimmy Shane. Had a good weekend, it sounds like.
He absolutely did. He ended up winning the Columbia Cup yet again, but this time wearing different colors and a different name across his chest, as he is now the driver of the Miss Madison, which is sponsored by Home Street Bank.
Now, do you think that Jimmy Shane's going to carry that over to the choppy waters of Lake Washington for Seafair Weekend?
Well, he didn't dominate nearly as much as he did in the past with the Oh Boy Oberto. I don't know what happened there sponsor-wise. Oberto was going away, but I guess the Miss Elam Plus team talked them back into being a part of their team. And so there's a bit of a partnership between those two, the Oberto and Elam. So there's one boat that has a little bit of the old Oberto colors. Art Oberto was even on the Columbia River. Or on the banks of the river, I should say. But Jimmy Shane was not the driver because the Elams always had their driver that they've gone with. And so in February, when it was announced that Home Street Bank was sponsoring the Miss Madison boat, then Jimmy Shane was their top pick, and as he should be. And, you know, it was a great final championship heat between the Elam Oh Boy Oberto boat and Jimmy Shane's Home Street Bank. And they were neck and neck until they actually hit each other and collided on the river. Bumping is okay, but flipping is not. And thankfully, no boats flipped. Nobody injured all weekend. A few boats did get a little bit of air and were light on the water, but it was, you know, everybody was safe. And Jimmy pulled away on the after that little nudge and bump those two boats had. So Jimmy Shane and the Home Street Bank victorious, and now they head to Seafair on Lake Washington. Of course, if you're not going, don't want to face the heat and the crowds, you can watch that on Cairo TV in the Pacific Northwest. And of course, the Blue Angels, a huge portion of the air show in Seattle.
Yes, Sean, and as we had mentioned, it's going to be a great weekend in the Pacific Northwest between Seafair and the NHRA coming to town. And of course, the NHRA will be at Pacific Raceways in the Kent, Washington. And so if you want tickets, I mean, it's a very pretty reasonable price for the spectator for full event passes Friday through Sunday. For general admission, it's only $139. For spectators who want the full event pass for reserve, it's $150. So if you want to have a great weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, get out to Seafair, or you can make your way over to the Pacific Raceways, Protect the Harvest for the NHRA and some spectacular stuff. For Seafair, Sean Wally, I believe they can go to seafair.com. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And Sean, you're talking how busy it's going to be in the Pacific Northwest for sporting events and all these spectators trying to get there. You're leaving out a very big weekend at Safeco Field as well. Ken Griffey Jr. weekend, his Hall of Fame bobblehead Friday night. His jersey retirement, number 24, will be retired, and he will be there for the ceremonies on Saturday night. And then Sunday, a day game, a kids' junior replica jersey.
Yeah, that should be an exciting time for the Seattle Mariners. Of course, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. being inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And that should be an exciting weekend, as you're mentioning, in Seattle. But my goodness, boy, I'm glad I'm not there, Sean, because you're mentioning some events that are going on. It is a busy, busy time.
Well, I will be heading that direction Friday evening and attending that Mariner game on Saturday against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for Griffey's jersey retirement. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, and of course the Mariners playing the Boston Red Sox right now. They will be playing the Angels. And you know, the Anaheim Angels are licking their wounds a little bit in the AL West. And so, you know, we've talked about this on numerous occasions. You know, the Mariners, if they're trying to get themselves back into it, and there's been some trade deadlines are coming up. There's been a lot of trades in Major League Baseball. Seattle Mariners are a little quiet right now, but hopefully they can make a big, big wave here to make a push toward the end of the season and possible playoff wild card.
A little quiet. They did make one trade yesterday, as did the Oakland A's.
Yeah, well, you know. I've mentioned this before as far as being an Oakland A's fan. You know, when things are going good, you know, Moneyball is something spectacular. But when you're trying to have fire sales, and not necessarily fire sales, but when you are, you know, emptying your roster of great players, you know, Josh Reddick being released today or being traded, you know, I saw it coming. But, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, Billy Bean is – you know, at the helm and trying to put together some type of a formula. And so, you know, this year is not the year. Oakland A's fans know that, but we'll see what happens here in the coming years and what he can put together as far as a good product on the field.
Now, Josh Reddick and Rich Hill out of town. And here we've got guys again that are the basically the stars of the team, and now they are out to pasture in terms of Oakland. Why is it Oakland's not a small market? They're not a Milwaukee, yet we keep seeing Moneyball over and over. And yes, I understand that the A's are out of it in the standings, but to consistently give up on the Josh Donaldsons, the Josh Reddicks, and just keep hoping that these young players continue Moneyball success, it's not working this year. Yes, it's worked in the past. Thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think that Billy Bean is doing the best that he can with the monies that are available. And, you know, because there's not a lot, even though the Oakland Bay Area is a big market, it's not a big market for two Major League Baseball teams just yet. And what I mean is that the Oakland A's have a hard time filling up the old Coliseum, and that is the problem right there. So with the Raiders playing in the Coliseum, the Oakland A's playing in the Coliseum, there's, you know, both of these teams are playing who's going to flinch first, and they're waiting for one of them to move out so that the other one can take over the land. That's not a baseball stadium, O.co. Oakland Alameda Coliseum is not a baseball stadium. And so they have a hard time packing it. So that's why you see the tarps all the way around the upper deck. And so with that being said, there's no revenue that's really coming in to where, you know, the Oakland A's can compete as a, you know, a great franchise. Now, when they get their new stadium in Oakland, which I'm hoping that it is in Oakland, then they'll be able to do some things with the tickets, you know, the gate and everything, and then they'll be able to put together a franchise. But right now, that's not going to happen until, you know, they can figure out the stadium issue.
So we mentioned while talking to our first guest, Ron Lipick, that training camp is underway for every NFL team. What's the latest and greatest after the first weekend of practice in Oakland?
You know, the greatest thing is that, you know, these guys are, I know that people, you know, it's cliche-ish to say that, you know, you don't read the press clippings or you know, the players are just focused on the season at hand. You know, I actually do think that the Raiders have embraced, and I've heard as much, you know, from the head coach that, you know, these guys do want to embrace that. They do want the challenge. They do want people to say that, you know, they're on the map and to look out for them. It's just up to them to go out and take care of business. The Oakland Raiders have been looking sharp, and I know that doesn't mean anything as far as, you know, the season is concerned, because it's not even preseason, it's training camp. But these guys, there's an aura. And, you know, as much as we see with the Seattle Seahawks, Denver Broncos at their training camps and how it's, you know, they pack the stands. I was looking on NFL Network today with the New England Patriots, that, you know, the stands are packed, you know, for these training camps. So are the stands for the Oakland Raiders. And even when they weren't popular in the past years, they've always had a strong fan base. But there is a feeling this year that these guys know that they're a great football team. They just have to go out there and play. And they are looking the part with all the additions that they have had in the offseason.
How about contractually? Anybody hold out? Is everybody accounted for?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And, you know, what we talked about last week, as far as Schneider, John Schneider for the Seattle Seahawks general manager, getting his contract. I don't know if you noticed, but 2 days later, the GM for the Oakland Raiders, Reggie McKenzie, gets a 4-year extension. And when I tell you that both of these teams are lockstep as far as the development of their teams, and Ron Lipick mentioned it as far as the Pittsburgh Steelers are concerned, as far as consistency, when you have guys like Schneider and McKenzie, they are developing their teams from the draft. All these players are accounted for. As a matter of fact, their GMs are now accounted for. And these guys are ready to go. Jack Del Rio has them pumped up. Ken Norton Jr. on the defensive side. These guys are flying around to the ball early. You just, you know, cross your fingers and say, hey, man, let's make it out of this preseason without any injuries. And let's start the regular season.
And up at the VMAC in Renton, no holdouts either. There were questions of whether Michael Bennett on the defensive line would show. He's been unhappy with his salary. This will be two seasons in a row now, but he showed up last year with no issues other than an occasional jab verbally, and that appears to be the same thing heading into this season, and he flat out says his wife will not let him hold out and lose out on money.
Yeah. So Michael Bennett, you know, I do have a question, you know, and you know, I understand that, you know, players have a right to issue their disdain for things. It just seems like Michael's in the middle of a lot of stuff. In the offseason, you know, a few weeks ago, I mean, he was just talking about Steph Curry and the price of his camps, which wasn't even his camp. If Michael Bennett did his research, he would know that and understand that. But he couldn't help himself from saying that. And then, of course, you know, he's talking about the stance, you know, on some players in the NFL not taking a stance in Black Lives Matter when the NBA is doing that. I mean, what is his deal? I'm trying to figure out, you know, is this something that, is this a side shtick, or is he really like that? I mean, maybe you can tell me. You know those players better than I.
Well, he's very outspoken, and he speaks his mind. He doesn't put a filter on. He doesn't band-aid what he says. And at times, his mouth can get him in trouble, and I'm sure he's been called to the principal's office a time or two. whether that's Pete Carroll or John Schneider, which you mentioned the contract for Schneider. Pete Carroll got his extension done a day, 2 days later after Schneider as well. So those two are locked up for the foreseeable future. But back to Bennett, yeah, he's always been somewhat of a free spirit, and he's bright and he's comical. He's very, very funny. If we can ever get him on this show, you will hear it firsthand, and you can hear it in other interviews. He just flies off the cuff, off the handle, and sometimes it's hilarious and humorous. Other times you kind of scratch your head. It's like, yes, maybe you're underpaid in the hierarchy of defensive linemen in the NFL, but you're still making $6-7 million a season. And you live in Hawaii when you're not in Seattle, so life isn't all that bad, buddy.
Yeah, and, you know, and especially playing for a franchise such as the Seattle Seahawks. Of course, you know, you mentioned playing at the VMAC, you know, a tremendous facility off of the lake out there in Renton. And, you know, you have a packed house. There's no greater feeling. And, you know, it just seems like there's a little bit of disdain in all areas of Michael Bennett's life. And life isn't that bad for him. I mean, man, you have a couple of Super Bowl appearances with one with the Seattle Seahawks winning. I mean, gosh, I just wonder what in the world, you know, does he look for trouble or is he, if he's just that type of a person, Mr. Controversial?
Well, in terms of trouble, no, not at all, because you're never going to see his name in a headline. Well, I can't say never, but you haven't seen his name in a headline that was troublesome in terms of the law or fighting with players or anything like that. You know, can the front office and head coach Pete Carroll deal with maybe he speaks his mind a little more than they'd like? Obviously they can, and they have. And moving forward, they're going to get a deal done with him. It's just a matter of whether it's now, before the season, or right when it ends. The way they run things, it's probably not going to be before the season, because that sets a whole new precedent and a whole new can of worms, because he still has 2 years left on the deal he signed 2 years ago. So they don't want to go down that slippery slope. They've been willing to work with players when they have 1 year left. If they start opening that Pandora's box, you never know what the rest of the players in that locker room could think.
Yeah, and old Michael was starting that chant last year when Cam Chancellor was out, and, you know, of course, Marshawn Lynch, you know, they kind of tampered with that a little bit as well. So, you know, Michael Bennett's kind of looking and seeing what's going on and hoping that, you know, he can get a big piece of the pie. We'll see. You know, he's an awesome player, you know, a definite pass rusher, and he wreaks havoc, man. And so, you know, they're going to be an awesome team as long as they can keep Mr. Bennett happy.
And, of course, on the shores of Lake Washington in Renton at the Seahawks headquarters, 13 practices are open to the public. Of course, they had a few of those this weekend. So definitely Seahawk hysteria is picking up big time in and around the Pacific Northwest. And I'm sure the same throughout the NFL, including Alameda.
You know it. And, of course, I talked about the NHRA working with them this past weekend. You know, NHRA funny car driver and longtime Raiders fan Cruz Pedregan was a guest at Raiders camp today. And so, you know, you get a lot of these players that come, former players that come in. And, you know, here we have an NHRA race car driver that goes into Alameda. Fun fanfare. And, yes, as you had mentioned, you know all the training camps all around the NFL are at an all-time high. And again, just hoping that these guys can make it out without any injuries. Knocking on wood.
Man, Sean, we're starting to get back into the swing of things. What is this, 3 straight weeks of live shows in a row?
Yeah, don't tell anybody. We just keep it moving, man.
Well, it's been another fun one. A big thank you to author of Steelers Takeaways, Ron Lippick. You can find the book at Amazon, and it is published by Cardinal Publishing. Follow Ron on Twitter at Pittsburgh Sport. You can check out his writings daily at pghsportsdaily.com, the Pittsburgh Sports Daily Bulletin.
Yeah, great guest. Great guest in Ron Lippick. And, I'm going to check out this book because, again, you just have to respect, historic franchises. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are the epitome of the NFL, having the most Super Bowls. And I know that there's a team across the bay that really doesn't like to hear that. But the Pittsburgh Steelers own the most Super Bowls out of all of the NFL teams. And if you get a chance to get the book, Steelers Takeaway by Ron Lippick, definitely do that, especially if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan or not. Man, Sean Wally, another great show in the book with this special guest Ron Lippick. We got a chance to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. We talked about, your time at the Columbia Cup in Tri-Cities, and of course myself at the NHRA drag races in Sonoma, man. We've been staying busy. Looking forward to keeping busy moving forward. And, as we say here on the double, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production for Doug Newson in Paradise, California. My broadcast partner, Sean Wally, in Sela, Washington, and yours truly here in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. You have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.